You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Network Studios, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Daniolo, and this evening, my guest is comedic actor and former policeman, Jim Perry, known as the Cop Comic. And Jim will join me on the show right after this first song from Fervor Records recording artist Super Stereo called Number 92 here on the Otto D Show. Check it out.
Listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was number 92 by Super Stereo here in the Auto D Show, which is brought to you tonight by Fervor Records. You can check them out online at fervor-records.com. And you can follow me and this show on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else by visiting my website at autod.com. That's OTTOD.com. And now, without further ado, let me welcome to the show this evening's guest, Jim Perry. How are you doing, Jim?
What's up, Otto? Thanks so much for having me on the show. I appreciate you.
Thanks for coming on. You're going to have to make me laugh because everybody we've run into says you're really funny.
Oh, really? I'll take that.
And that's good. I think that you've selected probably the hardest profession to excel at.
Yeah, it has its moments, I'll tell you that.
When did you start?
So I've been doing comedy just a couple years, and I'm retired from the police department. I was on the police department about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And after that, I opened a security company, and the security company that I own is doing really well. And it got to a point where my business is kind of running itself.
And that's a joke in all by itself.
Yeah, it's been good. And then what's funny is because it's kind of running itself, I was at home a lot and the wife started giving me a lot of honeydew stuff. And I was like, no, this isn't going to work. So
I gotta go.
I was like, I've always wanted to try comedy. So I signed up for a comedy class in Scottsdale. I think Sean Dillingham was one of your guests a couple weeks ago or something.
Yeah, Sean's great.
Yeah, and I signed up for one of his class and got the bug, and I haven't looked back, and I've just been like full speed ahead and performing all over the place.
And you mentioned when you were getting these lists of honeydews that you were thinking, you know, I got to do something else. I always wanted to try comedy.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? When did you first think you might want to be a comic?
You know, I was the kid that, like, when the parents were watching Johnny Carson, I was behind the couch like watching them watch Johnny. And then,
oh really?
Yeah. So I've always loved comedy, and you know, I really like George Carlin, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy. And,
Richard's from my hometown.
I just, you know, I've always been a fan, and you know, I lived in when I was early on and early, you know, young kid. My biological father was kind of abusive, and what was nice was during the holidays when he would tell stories and tell jokes, and he'd laugh. And I was addicted to everyone's happy when we're laughing. And, you know, that really kind of sinks into you as a kid. And as I got older, I was like, I really want to do that. I've always been the one to buy local comedy show tickets, going to all the comedy shows, watching comedies, watching the ones with the worst ratings. I would go out and still watch them. But yeah, I've always been a fan. And to be now on stage telling jokes is pretty cool.
Class clown growing up?
I've had my moments. I've been, yeah, suspended a couple times. Yeah. Started a desk on fire. They didn't like that too much.
They didn't like that.
Yeah.
That's a good one. You know, I have to...
Don't tell my background officer on it.
Yeah. I have something I wanted to share that I think is kind of funny too. When I was little, I always thought I wanted to be a comedian, but I couldn't... I'm talking young, 6, 7, 8 years old. I could never remember the word comedian. And your parents' friends always ask you, oh, so cute little kid, what are you going to be when you grow up? And every time that came at me, I would go, I know this. I'd say, I know this. Hold on. It starts with a C. It's not communist, because that's the one that would come to me. And everyone would laugh and go, well, that's good. Yeah. You know, and I was like, why is that funny? I didn't get the joke there, but I could never think of the word comedian, and I was doing it anyway.
I get C a lot at home. I get cocksucker by the wife a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So comedian's a little better than that. No, she's awesome. She's very supportive.
Now, you've had an opportunity in your career as a comic already to perform with some pretty incredible people.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So I've only been doing comedy for a couple of years, and I really just jumped in, you know, right in the pool and just really tried to perform every opportunity I could. But yeah, I've performed on almost every stage here in the Phoenix area and then also in California. But I've been on shows like Kill Tony, which is pretty popular at the Comedy Store. Met Conan O'Brien at Flappers in Burbank. That was
you met him
cool.
there, or you got to perform.
I met him. Oh, I wish I could have performed with him. I met him, and just meeting him was awesome. And then I can't remember the guy's name now, but the guy from Rescue Me, one of the actors there is a comedian on that show, and I got to open up for him, which was pretty neat. But yeah, I mean, I've been just performing all over and as much as I can, and then. Being prior law enforcement, I've really been trying to do my best, like raising money at comedy events, private comedy events, corporate events for veteran officers and their families and firefighters. And that's kind of the lane that I think I'm a little bit. And that's the lane that seems to be really taken off for me. Especially just 2 years in, it's tough to get into the clubs at this level. But yeah, I've done guest spots and stuff like that. I've been on a lot of private corporate book stuff.
Well, it's interesting to me too that, you know, you say you started into this thing just a couple of years ago. You've had some success, and part of it is maybe accidentally because you're so defined as something separate from just another comic.
Yeah, I think my persona is just a little bit different than what's out there.
Yeah.
You know, there's not, I mean, if you even Google it, there's not that many cops that are doing comedy. I mean, maybe a handful.
And then
especially that are not on the job. So I get to talk about some stuff that they can't.
Right.
Which is a lot of fun.
Was that the plan when you first started comedy? You thought, I'll just lean into the cop experience.
Well, you know, what was naive on my end is I really thought, and now I laugh at myself. I really thought when I went on stage and said, you know, I'm a naval veteran and I'm retired from the police department. I thought I could start off with that sentence in any club and people will love me.
Right.
And no, they don't all love the police. So I got to the point where
I better not tell them that.
Yeah. Like, so certain areas I would, you know, have to do like 5-10 minutes of material and then kind of ease them into it. And if they're already laughing and like you, then they're not going to usually backtrack.
Well, imagine this. You're out at a restaurant. You've had 2 or 3 drinks. You're ready for the show. And the first guy that walks on stage says, I'm a cop.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and I'm supposed to laugh?
Yeah.
So I imagine that people can get a little uncomfortable.
It is weird when you're enforcing like DUI laws and then you go into a comedy club and hey, make sure you have the 2-drink minimum. Drink up, you know, tip your bartender.
I'll be outside.
Yeah, and then I'll be outside running your plate. No, psych. I'm kidding. But yeah, it was like anything, you have to kind of learn your craft and you have to learn what they like. But when I'm at a show that is predominantly law enforcement, firefighters, veterans, it's a lot easier, or a more conservative crowd. But if it's a younger crowd, a more liberal crowd, I have to ease them into it and then it goes fine. But I learned that, you know, it's
on stage.
Yes. And that can be difficult, but I have learned that and it's easier now. So it's cool.
Yeah. We were talking just before the show started, at least I was mentioning that to me, it seems that you have this whole, you know, 3-joke minimum to win the audience over. It's like, if you don't get them on that third line, if you didn't get them on the first joke and then the second joke, you didn't get them, the third one has to, or you're going to struggle the rest of the set. Have you found that to be the truth?
Yeah. And I think self-deprecating is very important as a comic. If you go up there and you immediately self-deprecate yourself, people tend to like that or make fun of an authority other than, of course, the audience. Mm-hmm. I've always been amazed at newer comics that try to attack the audience in the beginning and think it's funny and it never goes well. And it's like, no, you got to self-deprecate yourself. Yeah. And then even when I do my police material, you know, there's a lot of my material that's making fun of police work, and you have to do that or you don't want to be the authority on stage. Mm-hmm. You want them at ease and you want them to be laughing. So that's super, super important, I think.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Have you done any TV?
TV? Well, I've done like a sketch series, like YouTube stuff, you know, okay. I'm dabbling in that. And, I've done 2 independent movies this year. But yeah, that's another kind
2 independent films.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit separate than a straight up, stand-up comic part. Was this a character part?
Yeah, I'm getting typecast. So
cop?
One of them made me actually a serious cop. My line was, I had to tell a guy his kid was dead. Ugh. But they were like, no, you've done the job. You could perform this. You've probably said this line. So, just really putting my toe in the water there.
How do you like that by comparison?
Compared to comedy?
Yeah.
Personally, I like it. I like performing in any capacity, but what I like about stand-up comedy is the immediate feedback you get from the crowd.
Yeah.
And when you write a joke and it's your joke and you get the immediate feedback, it's just so awesome. Mm-hmm. And then also you have the other side of that when you really believe in a joke and there's crickets. That's not so, awesome.
So then how many nights will you try a joke that didn't work the first time you tried it?
Until I pitch it kind of thing?
Like if it bombed and you knew it was going to be a home run, but it totally crickets, like you say. The next show, do you use it again? To see if that was just an odd audience or an odd event?
Yeah, audiences matter, I think, a lot of times. I mean, if you're at an open mic and it's all comics, then I don't usually judge my material at all. That's just practicing using the mic, really.
Yeah.
But I really have like a 3-strike rule. If I have a good audience and they're laughing at most of my stuff and I try a new joke and 3 times they don't laugh, then I'm changing that joke up. But yeah, there's definitely been times where I really believe in a joke and it just ain't happening. Or my wife, I said a joke that had to deal with pedophilia. And when you're a cop, you have a twisted sense of humor. You see crazy shit and then you're trying to make something disturbing funny. And my wife says, do not say that joke on stage. And I said the joke and sure as shit, it bombed. And I saved myself by going, my wife told me not to tell that joke. And I was
and they
like,
laughed at that.
And they laughed at that because I admitted that it bombed. So sometimes when you have a joke that doesn't work, if you admit that instead of ignoring that it happened because the audience knows it happened, they'll forgive you.
Well, that line, you know, my wife told me that not to say the joke is also in a sense self-deprecating because you're saying she called me an idiot and she was right.
And she was completely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Common line if a joke doesn't go is I'll be like, you know, one person might laugh and I'll be like, one laugh at a time. That's all I'm going for. And that usually will get them back. Uh-huh. You know, stuff like that.
Where do you find most of your material? I mean, obviously from the cop comic, a lot of it's coming. Yeah. A lot of the stuff comes from your background and experiences you've had. But where does new material come from?
Well, for me, I really even haven't had to tap into that too much. I mean, I have 2 boys, 2 teenagers, both addicted to shitty music and Fortnite. But other than that, I mean, they give me material here and there, right? But on the job, I mean, I was a policeman almost 10 years. There are just so many stories that are true. And then you twist them a little bit for humor or add tags, punchlines to it. But there's just a ton of that. Yeah, I haven't even probably hit a quarter of the stories that I've encountered and wrote jokes on them. But you're at the bar with your friends, or you're having dinner with your family, and something comes up in conversation and everyone laughs, right? And it's like, why did they laugh? And then you just, you know, make a joke out of that or make a story out of that. So, but yeah, it's just been really cool to kind of, it's been therapeutic too. I mean, on the job, I've seen some really disturbing things, if I'm being quite honest with you.
Yeah.
And to turn it into humor for me has been a therapeutic process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. I mean, you have a lot of cops out there that are, you know, taking their lives, that see stuff they can't get past, at military people. And if they had some kind of outlet, I think that would be good. And that's why I'm so passionate about raising money for those organizations.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as you mentioned, besides what you might have seen on the force as a police officer, you've served in the military as well.
Yeah.
And you were in the Persian Gulf.
Yes, I was in the Navy, and I did a 6-month med cruise, is what they call it over there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see any action, but we were over there during wartime and just kind of sitting in the water in the Navy. But, you know, we were at risk. But yeah, I mean, that was an interesting experience. That grows you up really quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was in the service at 18 years old. But they used to, in the Navy, they used to have talent shows, and I used to get involved in those and try to write jokes about that. I had a silly joke. What was it? In the Navy, my best friends are Jack, Jose. Oh, let me be more specific. Jack Daniels, Jose Cuervo, and Captain Morgan. I remember that I told that joke at a talent show in the Navy, and it did really, really well, at least in that group that time.
Yeah.
And then I got that, you know, that laughter from my buddies, and that you know, set a little spark in me, like, hey, that was a lot of fun, you know. Mm-hmm. And always been the guy at the bar that makes people laugh and telling stupid stories, and then be able to format that and do that for the public has been a lot of fun.
Were you also just an only child? Or
I was an only child. So my wife tells me I'm a spoiled little brat. But yes.
Well, you had to entertain yourself, which can be part of what comes from where the comedy comes from. You know, it's observation all the time of what's happening and then internalizing.
Yeah, there was a lot of times where, you know, I was in my bedroom by myself, you know, playing by myself. That just sounds weird. It just sounds weird, though.
But, you know,
playing with myself, too. Let's just be honest. Let's just be honest.
So now, you're not originally from Arizona, right?
Well, okay. Moved to Arizona.
I've heard of Chicago.
Yeah, weather, and weather.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So how long have you been out here in the desert?
We've been here not a while now. It's been 15 years already. Yeah, okay. 15 years. We love it. I have two teenagers, as I mentioned, but we moved here when my one son was 15 months old and my other son was just a few months old. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean,
and how old are they now?
My boys now are 15. It's funny when you have to think about it. I'm getting old.
Well, the change is so fast.
15 and 16. Yeah.
And the thing is, it seems to me that a child, call them, to use the term loosely, at 15,
yeah,
is a whole different human being at 16.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and when you have a scorecard of the things they've done wrong that they still haven't repented for at 15, by the time they're 16, they don't even remember any of that stuff. It's like they're not the same person. And you kind of have to start over all the time with who they are. They're like a different person year at 18 months.
And my 16-year-old just got his license. You know how you save, what's the Geico commercial, 15% on your auto insurance?
Yeah.
You know how you save 50% on your auto insurance? Don't let your teenager drive.
That's right.
That's how you do it, yeah.
That's right. My stepson, he's 18. When he got his car, first car, about 18 months ago, I told him, you shouldn't have got such a nice car. You're going to wreck it. You always wreck your first car.
That's so true.
And so, you know, what does he do? He backs out of the garage and runs into my car. I was like, great, perfect. First one's on me, you know.
Yeah, it's my son has a similar story. He calls me and he tells me, he goes, he hit the neighbor's car. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad you're okay. It's going to be awkward with the neighbor. And he goes, oh, yeah, Dad, when I hit the neighbor's car, it was still parked in their garage. How the hell do you do that? So it's been it's been
like,
a little
don't
weird.
Tell me about how the garage door looks. Let's just assume everything's okay. Holy cow. That's amazing. Now, you've been married for quite a while now.
Yeah, I've been married 23 3 years. Mm-hmm. I got married in 1996. Jeez. And met her in high school.
Okay.
And then
so high school sweetheart.
Yeah. And then I joined the Navy. She waited for me, got back, and we got married.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then we waited a little bit before we had the kids, and I got two good boys.
Now, do you find that being an officer helped you keep the kids in line? Were they threatened by that at all? Did that help?
Well, I can play bad cop pretty good. You know, we do good cop, bad cop at home. I tend to be the bad cop when I have to be.
But so like yeah. Some dads, when I was young, used a belt to keep people in. You would just like hold your handcuffs and rattle them.
Yeah. Well, I use the handcuffs for other things. Okay. Those have fur on them, yeah, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, my kids got in trouble and they're like, "Dad, do you have probable cause?" And I'm like, "Go to your room. You practice your right to remain silent."
That's funny. That is pretty funny. Now, you also went to college on top of all this stuff. You had a master's degree in adult education.
Yeah. So
how does that play into all this?
Well, you know, I've always been in a position with my jobs where I like to teach in some capacity or speak in some capacity. Even mm-hmm. on the police department, they made me the PR guy for a little bit. I was the DARE guy.
Oh, yeah.
Say no to drugs. That right. program worked out really good. I feel I made a difference.
Good.
I made a difference. But I lost a question. What was the question?
My college. Your master's degree in adult education.
Well, I had when I got in the police department, I had an associate's degree in criminal justice, and then I became a police officer. And then once I got hurt, I kind of had to re-identify myself. I thought I should go back to school, and then I got a bachelor's degree in business management, and then I also got the master's degree in adult education because I wanted to. I knew that my job in some capacity would involve teaching in some way. So for me, business management and then owning a security company, doing a lot of safety talks with my regular job, it was an easy transition. But school's important. I try to make sure the kids understand that.
Are they looking forward like that? Do they see that?
Yeah, I have really good kids. I mean, I tease about them, but they're... I think of me as a teenager and then I look at them and
you
I
feel
just,
lucky.
I feel really lucky. I think my mom's upset about this. She's like,
"You don't deserve kids."
I mean, they get good grades. They do what we say. I mean, we have little things happen, but I mean, really no major stuff.
What's a little
stuff.
Thing?
They come home a little late.
Okay.
Talk back a little bit, but I mean, nothing compared to the stuff I did. I was burning desk, as I said earlier. So
I know I was in the band Lighting Stages on Fire too. So
yeah,
you know, what are you going to do? Well, listen, also you are known in town for doing a lot of volunteer work.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about some of that stuff.
Yeah. So we're real involved in our church. I do a lot of volunteer work there and speak with the kids, teach the kids. And then when I was doing the comedy thing, I noticed that a lot of the comics like run their own room. And I was like, how do you do that? And one of the things in comedy that can be a struggle for a comic is you go to a show and then the booker wants you to bring people and you have to have a following and all this. And I thought, I want to book a show where I don't force the comics to bring people and I can give them a little money too. So I thought maybe I can do like a private club. And then I got real plugged in with the American Legions, the VFWs. They're all private clubs. And what's nice is that I invite like six comics every week to these clubs. They get to practice their material before they go to other shows. They're not required to bring people. And then we pass around buckets for charity of the American Legion's choice. And they're really giving people and we get to give money too. And I do it all voluntarily. And it's just been really cool. We've raised thousands of dollars for charity. And then I just believe volunteering is important and giving back. You know, a lot of people mm-hmm. gave back to me. You know, I don't come from much. And that's just important to give back to your community and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoy that. And I instill that in my kids, too. They volunteer and do what they can on their level. And my wife's real involved in that.
And just, you know, I guess for those of you out there with teenagers, how do you keep your teenagers involved or aware of that process? I mean, like, I've always found that going down to something like Salvation Army over the holidays and help serve dinner or something.
Yeah, we've
done
that
kind
of stuff.
I mean, 20,000 meals like in a day down there.
There's an organization out here that the kids are plugged in called Feed My Starving Children. You've probably heard of that. And they pack food and then they ship it overseas and for, you know, kids that need food and stuff like that. But I think the best way to instill that in your kids, at least worked for us, was, you know, being an example for them. If they see us and it's important to my wife and I, and we're actually doing it too, instead of just telling them, and then they also see our reaction to that. And, they're almost doing it on their own accord instead of being told. Mm-hmm. And they do, they get something from it. We brought them down to Rocky Point, and they had to feed kids their age. And you're talking about kids that are living in, like, you know, something I would put my lawn equipment in, and then that's their house.
Yeah.
And sheds. I mean, then they would call this their house. And once they see that perspective, and then they see how they live, you know, I think that just goes a long way. Mm-hmm. So my kids are pretty balanced.
Cool.
I don't know if I'll tell them that though.
I'm sure they're not listening.
I don't want them to get big heads.
Listen, so, you know what, Jim, if you don't mind, I'd like to play a song and give you a chance to
For sure.
Take a breath and drink a little water. This is another cut from Super Stereo off of the Fervor Records label called Remind Me here on the Auto D Show. Check this out.
Listening to Auto D coming at you live.
And that was Remind Me from Super Stereo here on the Auto D Show, where this evening my guest is Jim Perry, the cop comic.
What's up?
And we've been having some fun talking about kids and talking about you know, your career as a comic and a little bit about the film stuff. But let's kind of touch on how these two careers of yours, the police career and the comedy career, kind of cross. Obviously, you get a lot of stories from your experiences and your work, but have you ever had to, testify in a case or?
Yeah. I mean, that comes up. A lot of people don't realize, like, even if you're retired, you know, stuff comes back and you have to testify. So I, about six, the FBI at our house serving a subpoena.
Okay.
And they wanted me to testify in this case that I worked over 20 years ago. I can't remember my breakfast, but right. I'm supposed to remember this case.
Right.
But the funniest part of that is they come to the door. They're like, and my wife answers. And they're like, is Jim Perry there? She opens the door. She's like, yep, he's here. It's about time. What is that? Just lets that FBI walk right into my house. You know?
Your ride's here.
Yeah, but it was a crazy case. I would encourage your listeners to Google it. The guy's name was Eddie Hicks.
Okay.
And it was like Training Day stuff. You see the movie Training Day with mm-hmm. Denzel Washington?
Right.
So this crew of cops off duty, they were shaking down drug dealers, taking their money and their drugs. And I happened to get a call to a house that they were at because a neighbor called and thought that it was a real burglary. We get there, they show us a warrant, and we're like, okay, well, next time you're in the area, let us know because someone's going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, we call his boss to say, hey, let us know when you're here next time. And he's like, what are you talking about? And these guys were running amok in Chicago, shaking down people. And then what happened was the crew, they all went to jail. One guy fled. And he left the country for years. And then like 6 months ago, we get the subpoena and we have to testify against him. So they end up offering me like witness protection over this stuff. And I'm like, I already live in Arizona. What do I need witness protection for? You know what I mean? So I'm like, ah, no big deal. So I go back to Chicago to testify and I see cameras, people all over the place, like hundreds of people. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this case is bigger than I realize. And it had nothing to do with our case. It was that, what's that guy's name? The guy that pees on kids, Kelly.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Kelly. So he was there the same time this case was going on. So I was like ready to turn around and go back home. Maybe I do need witness protection. So, but yeah, I just had that happen. He got convicted and I was one of many cops that had to testify against him. But that was probably the craziest case recently that I had to go back and testify for. The funniest part of that is my wife and I, no shit, bought a mattress about a day before the FBI was at the house. And if you ever looked at a mattress, it says, don't rip off the tag. It's an offense. You know, right. It's prohibited by law. And then the FBI shows up. And that's the only thing I could think of that maybe I did wrong. I'm like, wow, they are really serious about these mattress tags.
All I did was take it off
yeah, right.
yesterday.
I'm like, wow, they really are enforcing this. That's the funniest crazy. Thing to me, though, was, you know, they said they couldn't find me. And I'm like, did you Google me? Did you go on Facebook? They're like, oh, yeah, we called your cell phone number and it was disconnected. I'm like, that's the search of the FBI. That's as far deep as you went. You could have sent me an email, a text message. I felt like I was the one in trouble. So, yeah, so that was probably the craziest thing where I had to go back and testify recently.
And when you were in the service or on the force, did you have very many cases where you were dealing with, you know, cross-communicating with people like the FBI or other agencies?
Well, there was times where, you'd have to deal with the DEA or the ATF or the FBI, depending on the case, if it was a federal case. Not too much. I mean, I was a beat cop.
Okay.
I mostly just went call to call to call. And like I said earlier, I did DARE for a little bit. But
a lot of domestic calls and stuff.
Yeah, domestic
violence
stuff. But
you get some stories
stuff.
Out of that.
Yeah. I remember I went on a domestic violence case where, remember that book, What to Expect When You're Expecting?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that book?
Mm-hmm.
So this husband and wife are arguing with each other and the wife gets mad, throws that book at her husband, hits him upside the head. So I'm thinking, I'm a smart aleck. And during the interview, I go, I bet you didn't expect that. Yeah, the guy didn't find it that funny. He didn't find it that funny. Got a day off for that one. So crazy stuff happens.
Well, how about traffic stops? Because I would bet that a lot of times that starts with an awful lot of trepidation that gets either increases or either escalates or de-escalates rapidly once you speak with the person and see them for that first few moments.
Yeah, I mean, traffic stops, I did tons of traffic stops. The two that always come to mind, though, and I've wrote bits about them because they're just too crazy to not talk about. I pulled over a guy because I was a police officer in Illinois and Arizona. I pulled over a guy here in Arizona and he was going 10 and I walk up to this car and it's got a pot 420 bumper sticker. It's a lime green Volkswagen, smoke coming out
rolling out the window.
Yeah, rolling out the cabin. I mean, it's like a Cheech and Chong movie. Uh-huh. I'm like, I felt like a super trooper that day. So I walk up. I'm like, dude, you okay? You're going 10 miles an hour. And no shit, he goes, that's the speed limit, man. I'm like, no, that's the highway sign, I-10. I mean, these people exist. And I'm like, when you get to the 101, that's not the speed limit, my friend. And that was probably the
certainly
craziest
guy.
Certainly
not in your state.
Yeah. So that stuff exists more than we realize. I pulled over a guy one time that was completely naked. That was fun. Yeah, he was I walk up. I'm like, what's up, man? And he tells me he's an art model. And I'm like, okay, why are you naked? He's like, I'm late for work. I'm an art model. And I look in his back seat, and there's like dildos, colored underwear. And I'm like, this guy's like a stripper. He's going like to a cockpit or something. I don't know. But these people exist. They're just driving around a city like totally normal people. And but yeah, there's just story after story with that. You'd be surprised what's driving on the street when you go home at night.
I bet. And as an officer driving, let me ask you this. It's a traffic question. Mm-hmm. You drive in your personal car, you drive in your police car.
Yeah.
Do people around you drive differently?
When I'm in my police car? Yeah, it's all I'm retired now, but right. Back then when I was in my police car, it was almost annoying because you get everyone that goes under the limit when they see you, or they slam on their brakes. Yeah, and that could be a little bit annoying. Or my wife will tell me when I'm in my personal car, when I'm going a little bit over the limit, she'd be like, you don't have lights on the car. There's not lights on this car. I get that a lot. But
you ever been pulled over by a friend or by any other officer?
I've been pulled over a few times. Uh-huh. Yeah, a few times.
That'll happen.
Yeah.
Do you pull out your old business card?
We have a professional conversation.
Okay.
And it's worked out for me. I'm okay.
All right. That's good. And then they go, listen, I'll only let you go with a warning if you promise not to write a joke about this.
Yeah. Right.
They don't want to show up in it.
That happens a lot now with my new friends. They're like, is this going to become a bit? Are you going to talk about this on
oh
stage?
Oh my gosh. You know, it's the same thing with songwriters here.
Yeah.
You know, if you date a songwriter, you know, okay, if anything ever happens, you're screwed, right? Mm-hmm. Well, now what about everyone's making movies, you know, because everybody can. And now you bring a movie about it.
Yeah.
It's going to take a while. So it's it is very crazy.
Who's that singer that every time she breaks up with somebody?
Taylor Swift is making a career out of it.
She's done pretty well with that.
No, she's done pretty well anyway. I don't know. I think she could pretty much pick whatever she wants to sing.
Yeah.
The thing, to get onto that topic, the thing that has really impressed me with Taylor Swift is the way that she managed her career, which is so much a part of really harnessing social media in a quality way.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember somebody came up to me. She came up in a conversation. And I said, oh, man, I'm a huge fan of hers. And they said, what's your favorite song? I said, I haven't heard any of her music. I'm just a huge fan of hers. I've watched her career go from nowhere to someplace. And the music's irrelevant. It's really how she's managed her career and managed the audience or watered the garden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So take a lesson there, young comic.
Yes. Social media is like so important.
Isn't it?
I mean, I have to have all those, you know, channels and those platforms going and uploading to YouTube.
So
and
do you ever
like
stop
that.
A joke on stage to do an Instagram post?
No, I haven't got that bad yet.
I think that'd be good, though. It'd be funny.
It'd be a good, it'd be a
like
bit.
All the big bands now, I'll take selfies with the crowd behind them.
I've seen comics do that at the end of their set, and then they turn around and take a picture of everybody. Yeah, I've seen that.
Post it, and the people dig it, because they tell everybody to tag themselves in the picture, so it just spreads the picture.
That's how they're marketing themselves. Hashtag this, hashtag that.
That's right. So what's your next gig coming up?
What do I have coming up? Tomorrow I will be in Cave Creek at the American Legion. We're raising money for, I can't think of the charity right now. They pick a different one every month, but we have 6 comics coming in and we'll be doing an hour and a half show. They have that Legion actually opened it up to the public, so the public can come, but that's Cave Creek, post 107. And we'll be doing a comedy show there to raise money for charity. And then I think I'm going to California. My calendar is filled with stuff. I think I'm going to California Saturday and we're doing, some private event out there. But yeah, if your listeners go to my website, thecopcomic.com, or follow me on any social platform at thecopcomic, I'm always posting my shows there. But, I'm probably doing 3 to 5 shows a week.
Yeah.
And, do a lot of charity stuff, of charity stuff to give back.
That's really cool. And then you've also been getting into writing. You mentioned earlier before the show you have a new screenplay.
Yeah, so I wrote a screenplay earlier this year. called Hot Pursuit. And then we're in the midst of writing a screenplay that should be done by mid next month or December called The Cop Comic. And basically it's kind of a super trooperish telling of my life story in a very exaggerated comedic way. But yeah, we're excited to possibly raise money for that and get that made. And I've been dabbling in acting too, in some independent films around town, and trying to get a feel for that to understand how I can go about my own project.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been fun. I mean, really busy the last year.
Well, you keep referencing we. So do you have a partner in these scripts or in this?
Well,
process?
I wrote my first screenplay just myself with my wife. She's a good proofreader. You know, she would fix sentence structure and stuff like that.
Right.
And then I'm writing this next screenplay with a fellow comic. And yeah, we're excited. It helps when you're collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's I think it's pretty strong, and we got good reviews on the first one. It's just the, you know, raising money to make movies is a whole science in itself. Mm-hmm. Talk about, you know, social media and having all those platforms, and then, you know, you try to get a movie made. Yeah, that's a learning curve that I'm trying to figure out.
Right. Well, once you do raise the money for the film, do you have interest in other roles other than writing and then acting? I mean, do you see yourself as producing the films or directing at all?
No, I hate to say never say never, right? But right now my focus is, like I said, I am a business owner. My business is doing well. I have to manage that because that kind of pays the bills. Comedy doesn't pay the bills. I do make a little money doing comedy, but, you know, gas money.
It's almost a break even.
Yeah,
effort,
gas money and a value meal at McDonald's. That's about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean... Yeah, I forgot the question again. You know, I do that a lot. I'm getting Alzheimer's, I think.
That's how good the question was. Let me throw another one even better at you that you can forget about before you answer it.
Yeah.
And that is, have you ever been hurt on the job when you were an officer?
Yeah, I mean, I was only a police officer about 10 years. And
that's a long time.
Yeah, it was long enough, right? But yeah, I got injured twofold. These are funny stories. I've made them parts of my act. So the first time, I was at a burglary call, and it was a restaurant, and we thought the burglar was still in the restaurant. So I'm walking through the kitchen with my gun out looking for this guy, and I slip, ironically, on bacon grease, and I fall on my shoulder. So the oink oink jokes, wee wee hasn't stopped in I don't know how long. So my shoulder's pretty messed up.
Still.
So yeah, it's still bad. And then I thought I was good enough to go back to work. And then we actually had a taser training. So like 50,000 volts electricity to your back for 5 seconds. So when they tase you in the back, what's supposed to happen is you have two officers on the side of you holding your arms so that you don't fall and hit your face. And this one officer, he didn't mean it, but when you get tased, your body has to move. And he kind of locked my arm in one position, and it destroyed my shoulder that was already bad. And if you can't hop a fence, you can't be a cop. So my point is, yeah, my shoulder's toast. So I had to kind of like reinvent myself. So opening a security company kind of made sense. And then, as I told you, organically, the comic and comedy stuff kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so.
What do your folks think of you doing comedy?
My mom, I'm an only child. She's always thinking I'm, you know, stressed out. She's like, you're doing too much. Doing too much. I'm like, I'm fine, Mom.
Does she think your routine's funny? Has she heard your routine?
Oh, yeah. She laughs at my jokes. My dad just shakes his head, but that's how dad is. So.
Was dad in the force?
No. He was a building inspector for the city of Chicago.
Which isn't funny.
No, there's
not. And so he doesn't really appreciate the value of that?
He's laughed at some of my stuff. He's actually told me a couple stories that I've made bits.
I was going to say, I bet he's got a few.
Yeah, he's got a few. He won't let me admit any of them, though. He's a little more strict.
Yeah, I understand that. How about your wife? How is she with your comic
She's
career?
Super supportive. You know, she just wants to make sure I'm happy and we have a hobby, and she's has her hobbies and stuff like that. And if this turns into something more, which it's going that way, which has been really cool, then so be it. But it's important, you know, that your partner supports it. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of comics out there that have went through divorces, breakups, or have partners that aren't supportive, and I think that's got to be a tough position to be in, but she's super, super supportive, which is nice.
A lot of comics really feel that comedy, to use the term very broadly, comes from a dark place.
I think for some it does. Mm-hmm. For me, it does sometimes. You know, I've seen, like I said, some disturbing stuff. So it has been therapeutic to make jokes out of it.
And do you think that's potentially why it's difficult to on relationships?
I think it can be.
For some people.
Yeah. I think I've made certain jokes where my wife's like, you know, that was our moment. And you're now talking about it on stage. I'm like, oh, no, we got to laugh.
That reminds me of this of a comic out now. Gosh, I'm horrible at remembering names. My wife's a big fan of his. He's got a couple specials on TV. And he always talks about his wife and mentions whether he has her permission or not before the jokes.
Oh.
But who's one of your favorite?
Ray Romano made a whole career out of it.
Yeah. Who's one of your favorite comics today?
Oh, today? I mean, one of my favorite comics from the past is like George Carlin, Richard Pryor. Today, I like more cleaner stuff, believe it or not, even though I'm not clean. I'm a big fan of Jim Gaffigan. Mm-hmm. I think he's great. And his wife is his writing partner.
Okay.
But I think he's super talented. I like his stuff. And, you know, Kevin Hart that guy's just exploded. But I think the one that's the best comic out there right now is Dave Chappelle. I mean, he's amazing. I mean, I've seen him perform quite a few times already, and just how he can go on stage and just talk for 2 hours like he's talking right in front of you,
right,
and you're the only one he's talking to, and he just makes it so funny. I mean, he's a talent.
Have you learned something from being at these shows from these guys? Has it impacted your show or your delivery?
Yeah, I mean, it's a learning experience. When you watch, you know, the comics that don't get enough credit are the ones that are touring that aren't on TV, that aren't on Netflix. There's some talented guys out there, and you watch those shows and how they work the crowd and talk with the crowd and make the experience in the show and make people in that room feel like they're just having that experience in that moment instead of just hearing a rehearsal or a script of jokes. But yeah, it's you learn from everybody and the different people you have. And then you talk to these guys in the green room and they're like totally different people. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have your stage persona and then you have the person that's off stage. But yeah, it's a learning experience every time I go to a show. And you learn a lot from each other.
Aspirations for your own HBO special or Netflix special?
You never know. But
you wouldn't stop it from happening.
Yeah, I wouldn't stop it from happening. I'm on YouTube.
That's right.
That's about my level right now. But I'll take it.
They look a lot alike when you have your phone in front of you.
Yeah.
Kids can't tell the difference.
But you never know.
Uh-huh.
I'm working hard. I mean, I have a very good work ethic, and I really try, and I think a lot of people in the scene would say, you know, that guy's, he's working it.
Well, my guest last week, he's turning 50, and he just decided he's going to put a band together, his first band, and his goal is to play the Super Bowl halftime show, and I thought, okay, well,
oh, wow.
that's a long road with a short timeline here.
Yeah.
You know, good luck, but yeah. I believe in lofty goals.
I did it kind of backwards. You know, there's a lot of comics out there that are young guys. And
right.
Coming and the starving artist thing, and I kind of did my career and we're doing okay,
right.
and now I'm doing the stuff that I wanted to do. And
I'm not as
desperate as some guys I think will come off, and I think that makes it easier to be successful at times because I don't have that desperation.
Mm-hmm. How about different audiences between, you know, speaking to a young crowd and an older crowd? Do you play the dad card more with a younger crowd? So
well,
they see you as, you know,
a younger crowd. I try to play the parent stuff more, the dad stuff more, deprecation more. The older crowd, the more conservative crowd, I do the cop stuff more. You have to definitely read the audience. Not everyone loves the police, so sometimes you have to tell them a few jokes before you get into the police material.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona, you know, overall, it's kind of a conservative state, and especially if I'm playing mostly in like VFWs and American Legion, that's kind of my crowd.
Right.
But when I'm at the clubs, yeah, I have to change and alter my material a little bit, talk about Dutch Bros or something like that to get them to connect.
Exactly.
What is going on with that place, by the way? It's like there's like cars lined out in the street at that place every time I drive
by. To spend $7 on a glass of sugar water. Yeah. And the thing, it's when I first went, we come at my age anyway from experience where the concept was to do your job well and efficiently in customer service. And at Dutch Brothers, it's like, please don't hurry. Just talk to the customers.
Yeah.
They all want to just be talked to. So you're the fourth car in line. And the first time you go, you're upset that these people are just talking instead of giving you your product that you came to get.
They're like,
but people aren't there for the product. They're there for the wait. to chat and walk away with a glass of sugar.
They're like Disney workers on speed at their place.
Yeah, but the customers, the thing is, the customers don't mind either. They don't mind sitting seventh car in a line where they know every car is going to take 100 times longer to get their drink than is necessary if it were just a commercial exchange. It is a social exchange as well, and people will wait for it.
Yeah.
Even though they're buying a glass of sugar water, they'll wait 40 minutes to talk to somebody for 4 minutes to get the dang thing for $7.
Not me.
It's crazy.
I'll stay at home with the coffee pot.
But to me, that's a business model that can't survive. It's merely because of this particular style of communication with this generation.
Yeah, right now it's doing pretty good.
I know, but it's 15 or 20 years, it seems like we won't want to buy like that, and they're built on the buying experience, not the product.
Right.
So it's kind of crazy.
I think there's something more in it than coffee, but that's just me.
I hate their coffee.
Yeah. My kids are all jumpy and jittery after they leave that place.
Well, listen, we're going to be running out of time here. I want to touch on something else. You do, so during some of your charity work and a lot of the private shows here in the Valley, have you had an opportunity to meet some local celebrities, sports people, or anybody?
Not too much. I mean, I met Jill Kimmel, which is Jimmy Kimmel's sister. I've done some.
That's close enough.
Yeah, that's probably about the closest. I met you, Otto. I was feeling.
Boy, if I'm on that list, you're in bad shape.
I'm hoping to get some autographs from you. So
no problem. That's funny. So, I think you already mentioned you got some shows coming up. And so the easiest way for people to get a hold of you, as you mentioned, is your website and social media. So we got that covered. What else? Let me just scan through your little list here and see if there's anything else that I didn't ask you about that I wanted to. You already mentioned you were the DARE officer, which is kind of cool, the media relations officer. Officer of the year in 2004.
I was, and that was when
you really slouched off after that, didn't you?
Then I was
that
like,
was a long time ago. I got one, honey. I don't have to be. You don't have to work that hard anymore.
Yeah, I did.
How did that happen, and where did that come about?
It was when I was doing the PR stuff. I was doing the DARE stuff and going in. I did like officer friendly is what they called it too. I mean, I was talking to kids from preschool age to high school age, and talking about the police department and drugs and stuff like that. And somebody nominated me, and I got voted, and it was just a nice thing to put on the resume. But I got off the job, and almost 2005. So it was right towards the end.
So that's why you didn't keep getting these.
It was a nice
thing. Once you weren't an officer anywhere, they couldn't give it to you.
Yeah, I was like,
I kept nominating.
Yeah, I got it. I'm good.
Ever do
Let me slip in a kitchen on bacon grease and then.
Ever do any work with canines in your career?
No, I'm not a big canine fan. I've been bit
the look on your
too
face
many
means
times.
We hit a
yeah.
There.
Yeah, I've been bit a bit too many times. So
out on the beat?
Yeah. I get bit a lot in my current job because I do a lot of in-home consultations.
People in the clubs bite you at a bad job?
No, it's these little... that happens at times. But these little dogs, man, these little Yorkies and these little Shih Tzus, they are little shits. They bite
like
your
they
ankles.
They don't know they can't.
Yeah, the big dogs are the nice dogs. It's the little dogs that are mean.
Huh.
So, yeah, I'm not a big dog fan.
So, no jokes about... dogs in the police force in your routine yet?
I have a joke. It's made up that because I'm retired, so I've smoked marijuana on occasion, and I have a joke that I wrote that we adopted a canine officer, a retired drug sniffing dog. And then the joke goes into, we're really messing this dog up, we're smoking pot and he's a canine officer. So, yeah, I got a bit about that. And then I'm like, he's a male dog, but he's acting like a little bitch. And then I say my wife has a marijuana card. And then someone asked me, does your wife really have a marijuana card? And I said, yeah, she's got Clone disease. And they're like, Clone disease? I'm like, oh, I'm saying it wrong. And they're like, Crohn's disease? I'm like, I don't know. Whatever Google told us to tell the doctor. That's what my wife has. So that's some of the bit, yeah. And then
that's funny.
I think there's a line in there that we gave the dog I got it's grief on this. So there's a tag on there where I say we gave this dog put pot in its kibble to calm him down. He takes naps and eats Taco Bell all day. And sure enough, I had this lady that like loves dogs be like, you're giving your dog drugs. I'm like, it's a joke. So I'm always amazed at how much people believe everything you say on stage.
Mm-hmm.
That's
interesting.
Yeah. There's definitely some exaggeration or you say a joke or a story about somebody you know and stuff like that. But yeah, that's probably the only dog bit I got.
So either of your sons leaning toward the comic career?
one of my sons wants to be a police officer, but
because he thinks it's funny.
He thinks that's funny. But no, they haven't talked about, my boys are pretty shy, so I don't know if they do the comedy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back on dogs, talking about dogs. So I need to write a bit about my mother. She dresses this dog up in country. She has a Shih Tzu dog,
okay,
and she dresses it in country dresses and puts bows in its hair. She didn't dress me that good as a kid, and she's dressing this dog like that. So I need to write a joke about that.
Is she in Chicago still?
No, she lives in a suburb out here called Casa Grande, which I'm sure you're aware of.
But... Oh, well, she should come and see me.
Yeah?
Because I actually, unbeknownst to you, Jim, glue a beard on my chin and put a fake tattoo on my arm that says cowboy, and I front a Brooks and Dunn tribute show, and we're playing in Casa Grande.
Oh, really?
Dressing her dog up with country
clothes.
Yeah,
she'd love that stuff.
You know what? I'll have to check my schedule when we get done with the show, and I'll let you know. But
that sounds a lot of fun.
In fact, if anybody else wants to know, download my app. You can download the AutoD app in your app store. It's a free app, and it has my performance schedule along with links to all my websites and movie stuff. And it also has a list of who's going to be on the show. And if you'd had the app, you'd have known Jim was going to be on the show tonight.
Yeah.
So check that out. But she might enjoy that if she's into Brooks and Dunn. She loves that word stuff, on. Yeah. We do that.
Yeah, if you ever do Elvis impersonation,
she'll
be in the front row.
There is a guy. She's probably seen him. There's a friend of mine in town who does a great Elvis.
What's his name?
He is a sweetheart. His name is Chance Tinder.
Okay.
Which is his real name. And I think, when I came up to him, I said, hey, you know what? That Chance Tinder thing, that's a great idea. He's like, what are you talking about? Well, I mean, Tinder. You take Tinder, you're really taking a chance. So Chance Tinder is like the perfect name for a guy who's actually Elvis Presley.
Look, you're writing jokes over there. We need to get you on stage. That's
and this
good.
Is like, no, that's my name. I'm like, no, that's not your name. I'm never going to buy it. But, you know, he has a voice when he speaks that sounds so much like Elvis anyway. And he looks enough like him when he puts on the hair and the glasses and blues on the sideburns and starts singing. I mean, the guy does a great job. So He's got a bunch of Elvis shows around town, but mom, just Google, Chance Tinder.
Oh, she'd love
the Presley
stuff.
Project. Yeah, she'll love this guy.
She goes to all those cover concerts, Elvis tribute casinos shows. And stuff like that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we do. I was in a Lennon show as well that only plays far more rare. We did the show last August in the Hamptons.
Okay.
We have a show next October.
Oh, very cool.
So, you know.
Yeah, she's taking me to a Bob Seger show, a Led Zeppelin one.
Oh, yeah. There's a few great Led Zeppelin bands out there I've seen.
Yeah.
That tribute world's a whole nother world. I wonder when they'll start doing tributes to comics. Have you seen anything like that?
I haven't seen anything like that. I mean, you have that app. My kids have TikTok. That's super popular.
Okay.
And I've noticed them all lip-syncing comedy bits on there. So that's probably the closest I've seen to tributes.
Boy, we used to do that. If what's his name? Bill Cosby. It's such a bad name. No, I can't even say it. But when I was a kid, you know, we had vinyl records of comics even, you know, and Bill Cosby had records out. And we could sit there and we would mouth the whole album front to back for our parents or whatever. It was just always fun to do that kind of thing.
He's a very talented comedian. And it's a shame that his legacy's taking the turn it has.
It is. Well, listen, Jim, thanks so much for coming in. We're coming up on the end of our time together.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, I appreciate you taking the time. And again, I want to thank you for your service in the military. I want to thank you for your service as an officer for all the work you do for the community, for charity. I think that's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with your screenplays and your shows, and hopefully we'll get to work together on something.
10-4.
All right, take care.